It's time for Bleed Tech Blue Radio. This is your source for Louisiana Tech sports news. For the next 90 minutes, Bleed Tech Blue Radio goes deep inside La Tech football, basketball, and recruiting. Now here's your host, Jonathan Ford.
Welcome into Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I am Jonathan Ford, Jay Ford, publisher and host, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com and host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jared King, my co-host, a couple of sponsors, then we'll get right into it.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Dowling Smokehouse. Give us a call on the Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. Email your questions to radio@bleedtechblue.com or, of course, tweet us with the hashtag BTBRadio.
Jared, of course, Tech definitely on the short end of the stick against OU, but did score 16 points, and my stat of the weekend, those 16 points were more points than Tech scored in 10 of 12 games last season.
The offense scored, correct? Because the offense scored more. They scored, that was more than the offense scored in 10 games last season. That wasn't more than they scored in total points in 10 games. It was only 8, but the offense scored. Regardless of whether or not – I don't care if they scored more points than they scored in however many games of however many last year. The point was has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with the fact that they that the offense at least had some semblance of an offense. There was a rhyme
and reason.
Exactly. A year ago, there was no semblance of an offense. There was no semblance of a passing game. Cody Sokol went 14 of 18 in the second half and led that, you know, brought that game to, not necessarily closer or anything like that. I mean, it was over. But like I said Saturday night in the postgame show, Oklahoma's second string, the players that were in on second string, because they weren't all they didn't have all their twos in there. They left their starters in through halfway of the fourth quarter. But the twos and the threes or whatever that are in there at different positions, it was about 50-50, are still going to be better than the ones at ULL. They're still going to be better at the one, than the ones at UNT. And they scored the touchdown against players that are more athletic, have bigger size than the players they're going to face in conference play.
Without a doubt. And I, watching the first half was painful.
Absolutely.
The first quarter, it was clear that the environment, the atmosphere, all that stuff was overwhelming to the guys. Cody Sokol looked out of sync, but he was running for his life. They figured out how to get some protection for him, which helped him immensely. In the second quarter, he started settling down. They scored right at the end, towards the end of the first half. So he started looking much better. He finished the day 22 of 36 for 191 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 1 interception. The 1 interception he should have eaten. He just should have taken the sack and lived to play another down.
Right, yeah. And that interception was because he wasn't able to step into the throw. He was being hit as he was stepping forward. He couldn't step into the throw. He left it short, kind of floated the ball. It was a bad decision. It was a bad decision, but at least he was trying to move the ball down the field, up the sideline. I mean, that's more than any quarterback was looking to do last season.
The wheel route to Kenneth Dixon that he threw short was a touchdown, but he did leave it short, and it was almost intercepted. But that's a throw I know that he wants back because Kenneth had nobody between him and the end zone. So I loved how they used the running backs out of the backfield. That helps with blitz. You can't pin your ears back and blitz every down when you have a running back running free in the flats, because the linebackers typically have the assignment to get the running backs out of the backfield. So the offense, like you said, the scheme was much better than it was a year ago. I don't know what that is, if it was Skip Holtz versus Tony Peterson calling the plays. I don't think that's I think it's more personnel than anything. There's better players at on the offensive side of the ball this year. I did find it interesting, Jared, that they mixed up the offensive line some. Bringing in Jens Danielsson, and he played left and right tackle. Kirby Wixon played, and David Mahaffey played. Holt said yesterday that that was the plan, was to play eight offensive linemen. They knew playing a physical team like that they couldn't play with just five.
Well, you're looking at one of the biggest defensive lines that you're going to play all season, and Phillips at 6'6 and 340-plus pounds at the nose tackle position for Oklahoma.
He was a monster.
He wasn't just a big guy. He was a legitimate football player. He could play the game of football. And so it was obvious that you weren't going to be able, especially with the time of possession favoring Oklahoma so much, being able to convert third downs, being able to convert fourth downs, and keeping – what am I saying? I was talking about the defensive line because I'm reading about the defense right now. But with the offensive line, you played eight guys. You bring Jens Danielsson in. You bring Mahaffey in. You bring Wixon in. And you at least get those guys some reps in a real game game speed. And I thought in the second half they played a lot – the offensive line played a lot better than it did in the first half. They were able to, create a pocket for Sokol, give him a little bit more time. I mean, that was when the safety was ejected from the game for targeting Sokol,
which I hate that rule.
Regardless, Sokol had a great pocket and tons of time to throw that ball, which they only brought three, and everybody else dropped into coverage, which is why he couldn't find anyone open to try to make a pass and resorted to trying to make something happen with his feet. But he at least had time to throw the ball. I thought that the offensive line certainly can still improve. But when you're talking about the kind of play that you got from that offensive line against the quality of defensive line they were facing in Oklahoma, there was you could pull a lot of positive from it.
So what you're saying is keep things in perspective.
Absolutely. And we knew that going in, and we said that last week. You can't really assess this team based on the Oklahoma game.
So I ask you this then. Even though we're gonna take another segment based on our outline to talk about the OU game next in the next segment, but I ask you this: do we know anything still?
A couple of things. I think you know a couple of things. I think you know special teams is bad,
needs work.
I think
they showed promise.
I'm gonna tell you what. I was a little embarrassed watching the game that on the very first kickoff, Tevin King fields the ball in the end zone, and Hunter Lee basically like hugs him and stops him and puts his both hands up and makes him take a knee. And then every time after that, Hunter Lee felt like it was necessary of him to tell Tevin, no, you take a knee, don't bring it out, instead of letting him try to make some kind of play.
See, I'll disagree with that. We'll start with that one. In the pantsification of America of these new rules of special teams where you get the ball at the 25 on a touchback, if the ball's in the end zone, odds are you're not bringing it out to the 25, so kneel it.
But at the same time, are you going to do that every play? Do you have to tell him to kneel it? Does the player have to tell him to kneel it every play? Is that not something that maybe he could make that decision on his own when he sees what kind of space he's got? I don't know.
Against a team like OU with that kind of team speed, I would say he needs to be told, just in case he's not going to, kneel the ball in the end zone so you get the ball at the 25 instead of the 15 or the 10 or the 7 or the 5, wherever you happen to be, because of all the team speed on OU's.
And maybe defense. That's a smart football play. Maybe that's a smart football play by Hunter Lee to tell him, you know what, no, wait, let's take it at the 25. Regardless, what I'm saying is that you didn't have to do that every single time. You didn't have to basically bear hug him and push him onto the ground in order for that to happen, in order for that to take place. But special teams still need a lot of work. I'm not a fan of the rugby style punt. I'm not a fan of switching back and forth between the rugby style and then the traditional style and never actually really pinning them back anywhere.
I hear you there, but I will say this. While I don't like the rugby either, it was effective. It keeps the ball out of a dangerous punt returner's hands, which Tech's going to see again Saturday against ULL with Elijah McGuire. He's an electric player with unbelievable speed. You're going to see more rugby punts Saturday. Logan McPherson's punting the ball a lot better than he was last year. I also will say this. The kickoffs, I think there was some wind going on in that stadium. They didn't talk about it on the broadcast because, let's be honest, it was about as pro
God
OU broadcast or pro the home team broadcast you're ever going to hear. So they're not going to talk about anything like, oh, how's the weather? But I think there was a lot of wind going on in that. The kickoffs were deep.
Yeah.
Jonathan Barnes was able to get some good kickoffs. He didn't kick off very much.
No, he didn't.
And I thought that Logan did an okay job. The coverage teams were a concern.
Right. The coverage teams were not great. I mean, there was only the one, which was an 18-yard return. There was really the only one return, and part of that was due to the rugby style kick. At least it was going, it was kicking out of bounds and stuff like that. Like at least it was going, you know, out of bounds. But
and Holt said
the coverage teams weren't great.
And Holt said yesterday that they are a directional punting style team, and. Let's be honest, none of them were directional.
No. And
pretty much all of them were down the middle of the field. Well, if you're a directional style punting team, you want to use the sideline as an extra defender. So that's the purpose. Well, they didn't do it. And that's something that Logan will have to work on. But again, he's a sophomore.
Right. And like Skip said yesterday, he did mention that most of the mistakes they were making are correctable. It's not as if it's, you know, just it's correctable stuff. And so
special teams is something you can very much fix.
Right. But I didn't think the special teams was
a bright spot. No.
Right. It certainly wasn't a bright spot. So you can take those two things into consideration, and then I'll give you one more. And that is that regardless of how Cody Sokol plays against ULL next week, I still think that Sokol was the man for the job over Ryan Higgins and is 100 times better than Scotty Young, which doesn't necessarily take a whole lot.
You went there, didn't you?
Of course.
The quarterback play was much improved. The toughness that he showed after getting demolished in the first quarter to come back in the second half, and he actually stepped into some throws where he got hammered some more, and on a fourth down throw, on a third down throw, and he moved the chains. That takes some gumption, to say the least.
Right. Cody, he proved that he does have a chin Saturday. He proved that he's got a chin because he took some shots. He absolutely did.
Let's take a break. On the other side of the break, we'll continue talking. We'll talk more in depth about the offense, the defense. You give us your thoughts on the Keller Williams Parish-Wide Partners Hotline, 888-993-7762. Later in the show, we're going to have Josh Parrott, a former beat writer for the Advertiser in Lafayette, and also former Tech defensive tackle, current Oakland Raiders defensive tackle, Justin Ellis, joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio in the 7 o'clock hour. Make sure you stay tuned to that, and we'll be back right after this.
Who's going to make it? I am the game, you don't wanna play me. I am control, no way you can shake me. I am him.
Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio and ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com and host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jared King, co-host and staff writer for BleedTechBlue.com. A couple of sponsors, then we'll get into more OU talk.
Bleed Tech Blue Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Dowling Smokehouse. Give us a call on the Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. Email your questions to radio@bleedtechblue.com. Or, of course, you can get on the Twitter machine and use the hashtag BTBRadio.
Oh, the Twitter machine. You know, there's another statistic that's kind of surprising for Tech. If you remember last year, one of the reasons Tech's defense struggled so much is how much they were on the field because of unsustained drives. Now, that was the fact, and that was still the fact in the first half. But they finished the game where Tech had the advantage in the time of possession battle.
Yeah, they did, and I was really surprised looking at the post-game stats that Louisiana Tech actually led that time of possession battle 31 minutes and 2 seconds to 28 minutes 54 seconds. I can't be right. Anyway, that's what they have on ESPN. But
I have it here as well.
Well, that doesn't add up to.
Yeah, it does.
No, it adds up to 56 seconds.
3102 is 60 minutes. 2858 to 3102 is 60.
Oh, I have 2854 right here is what it says. It says 2854.
Oh, I've got 58.
Yeah, I don't understand that. Regardless,
Anyway, we digress.
What was that? Tech won the time of possession, and it was really because of the second half. And the second half, they were just able to sustain drives a little bit more. I mean, at one point there, they had nine consecutive drives of three plays or less. And so they just weren't able to sustain any kind of momentum in the first quarter. Really, right, sustain momentum. They weren't able to get any momentum. And then right there before half, they get the 36-yard field goal from Jonathan Barnes to at least have some kind of points on the board, 31-3 going into halftime.
I do like seeing the fact that Tech had two receivers that had more yards than any OU receiver.
Right. Sterling Griffin had a good game. He had 7 catches for 74 yards. He was only targeted 8 times, so he caught most everything that was thrown to him. And then, of course, Trent Taylor had 4 catches for 68 yards in that touchdown.
I thought that Trent Taylor probably had the best game out of the receivers. And Sterling Griffin had a really good game, and Sterling Griffin looks like a different player than he did last year.
Right. Well, I think this year he's healthy.
Yeah, but you think back to that catch that Trent Taylor had on the sidelines. That was an unbelievable play.
Absolutely. But not only that, I mean, he laid out for one there and got his left hand on it and couldn't quite corral it. And the announcers made a comment about how, regardless of whether or not everyone else is still playing in this game, wide receiver Trent Taylor still is. But that was something that I was impressed with, was Tech's attitude all the way to the end of the game. They continued to compete regardless of the score, and especially when it came to Trent Taylor there in the fourth quarter.
And like I said, the use of Kenneth Dixon and Blake Martin out of the backfield was really nice. You add Jared Kraft, who I think is under the weather right now, to that mix. Tywin Walters is a guy that can catch the football pretty well out of the backfield. And the addition of Connor Smith, who to me was the biggest surprise coming out of fall camp. One of those quote-unquote mids, as Coach Holtz calls them. I'm still not sure exactly if that's a term that anybody else uses, but it's a term that he uses. Connor Smith being a 6'3", 215-pound receiver. Tech plays him an outside receiver and inside receiver. That's somebody. He finished the game with two catches for 12 yards. One catch, he managed to find a hole in the zone, but he had a foot out of bounds, so that catch was negated. But the fact that he had enough IQ, football IQ, to find the weakness in the zone whenever Cody Sokol was scrambling, to know to do that was huge. And he's a former quarterback, so he knows to do that. Staying on the offense, Jared, were you expecting this offensive scheme to be as multiple as it was?
You know, when I got to halftime, I was watching the game with a couple of friends. When halftime came, I said, you know, Skip told us that we were going to see some diversity to the offense, some multiple looks, some very, you know, different formations, that type of deal. And I said, have y'all noticed that? And both of them agreed that, yeah, absolutely, that this offense, at least in week one, I'm sure they didn't show, you know, all of their stuff.
Oh,
I mean, it's Oklahoma. Why would you? But they already were looking, you know, he's been using the word multiple. Well, they have at least shown multiple formations, multiple sets. You're talking about having, you're talking about having a guy like Gaston out as lined up, you know, as a tight end.
Or a fullback.
Or a fullback. You're talking about having, you know, Ricky Jones in the game a little bit. I mean, those type of players, that's nothing that you would have seen last year. Not because they couldn't have used it last year, but because they didn't have the personnel to try to employ those types of formations, those types of positions. And this year they've got a little bit better personnel.
You know, last week I think we talked about how almost pointless the depth chart was that Tech released. Do you remember that?
Yes,
that talk?
Yes, I do.
So let's go back and we can compare the depth chart. We don't have to, literally, but talk about the depth chart last week compared to who started in the game. They did not come out with 4 wide receivers, which was not a surprise to anybody that's been to practice.
Right, no.
They came out, their starting formation was a tight end and a fullback and 2 wide receivers. Yes, Tech fans, they're releasing depth charts every week, but take them with a grain of salt. What you can take from them is the offensive line and quarterback, but the quarterback's now the starter's known, and without an injury, that's not going to change, no one believes. And Kenneth Dixon, same story. So, yes, there is a depth chart there.
And on the offensive line, I really wouldn't be surprised to see something change there between last week and this week.
Yeah, Kirby Wixon had a really good game, and you could see him maybe at left guard.
Right, yeah, absolutely, at the guard position. And then you're talking about
him at center, move Brunson over to left guard,
right,
something like that.
Right, no, and possibly, you know, you could see Jens Danielson come and play at either one of those tackle positions. And so I definitely think that there could be, regardless of whether or not just like what you said with the depth chart, regardless of whether or not that depth chart is truly accurate, I do think there could be some changes to the offensive line, at least on paper, this week.
And then you talk about that offensive line. Did you notice that Josh Robinson had the number 95 on?
I did not.
Because they went into some, not to bore people with X's and O's, but I think this is very relevant. They went into a quote-unquote max protect scheme where they only two wide receivers. They had a two tight end set with one running back so that they could max protect on a pass play. So you have, I think it was Gaston on one side and Josh Robinson in the number 95 jersey at the other tight end position. So Josh Robinson, for those that aren't maybe not as familiar with the roster as us nerds are, is an offensive lineman, typically plays guard. So for him to be he wears number 95 because that's a quote-unquote eligible number, and you have to be in an eligible number to play tight end. So that's why they put him in 95. But that tells you that Skip Holtz is willing to do whatever it takes to protect his quarterback and to complete a pass downfield.
Hearing that almost kind of reminds me of Mike Vrabel for the Patriots lining up from that linebacker position, coming in at tight end and red zone situations and catching touchdowns and stuff. Just crazy stuff. But like you said, what it shows is that he's willing to protect the passer. He's willing to do whatever is necessary to protect Sokol. And, you know, Skip said yesterday that in that second half, Sokol looked like the efficient quarterback that he had been all camp. And that it was just a matter of getting him, you know, getting him in the pocket, getting him in the pocket. I mean, it's the first game he's played for Tech. He's been with the program for, you know, 35 days, whatever it is,
since the summer.
And then he has to go out there and play in front of 85,000 people against the number 4 team in the country. And of course, he probably came out with a little bit of jitters.
And let's look at the defensive side of the ball. Like we said, that was the most disappointing to me. Yes, the special teams didn't play well, but with a redshirt freshman at kicker, a sophomore at punter, those things are are understandable, and they can be fixed a whole lot easier than a lot of things can be fixed. But defensively, there was no pressure on the quarterback. He could have tweeted out tweets from the backfield, probably could have called his mom, maybe even made some dinner with all the time that he had in the pocket. Vernon Butler was the best defensive lineman to me. They double teamed him much of the time, but he was still active. He was a machine. Houston Bates had an interception, and once he backed out into pass coverage. I would like to see, honestly, this defense to maybe go to a 3-4 and stay in the 3-4 and let Houston Bates play an outside linebacker position. I think that would be a good thing. The linebackers really were probably my biggest disappointment on the defense. They were out of position a lot. Didn't stay in their lanes and their gaps. Tony Johnson, who had been the guy that you heard the most heard the most about, really to media day and then in fall camp. He was almost non-existent. Kentrell Bryce, he was bringing the wood from the safety position.
Yeah, Kentrell Bryce had a lot of big hits, but
and then one more thing, Terrell Pinson. I think this was his first game at linebacker after playing safety last year. I think he's still getting his feet wet, but he needs to get his feet wet really quickly. They need him desperately.
The only positive that I'm taking away from the defense in this game, and part of it is because I still have high expectations for this defense. I do think that the defense will have to keep them in a lot of games. Obviously, it was against Oklahoma, and you have to take some of that stuff with a grain of salt. But
yeah, because Oklahoma is legitimately a top five program.
Absolutely. One of the things that I was the most pleased with in the defense was that they at least continued to compete for the entire duration of the game. I mean, Oklahoma's running backs were big running backs. They have a power running back, and they've got a scat back, Samaje Perine was their quote unquote scat, but he carried Lloyd Grogan into the end zone there.
And Lloyd Grogan also got carried by one of those 375 pound offensive linemen. Did you see that play?
I saw lots of players being carried by
that was
much larger players. But what I want to get at is that they just didn't play very disciplined football. The secondary was supposed to be the strength of that defense. I thought that Bryson Abraham accidentally that he got totally and completely shown up by Sterling Shepard on that fade touchdown. It was embarrassing. It was terrible. Bryson Abraham gets subbed in last year, I believe it was against Tulane, and immediately gets burned for six, and then here against Sterling Shepard, who's probably the best receiver that they're going to see all year long, he immediately gets burned for six again. And Lavander Liggins, I don't understand why he was showing his abs the whole game. I didn't get why he had his jersey rolled up the entire game, but regardless, he had a pretty good game. Adarius Barnes didn't do anything. I honestly was a little disappointed with AB and what he was able to show, but Quinterell Bryce, yeah,
and Xavier Woods. Xavier Woods may not always show up in the stat sheet, but he's directing the show.
And he had a couple of big hits too. Xavier Woods had a couple of big hits also. He really did. I just was disappointed in the way that they didn't play very disciplined football. Now, I did like the way that they were at least wrapping up on tackles. But still, there wasn't a whole lot of discipline to it. They still can't contain the edge, that type of deal.
And good news is they'll play one more offense and defense that has that caliber of athletes the rest of the year.
And that's
Auburn.
An Auburn team. And
who's another top five team.
Absolutely.
So the good news is that there won't be any rosters that have that kind of talent top to bottom. Again, on the other side of the break, we're going to talk a little Conference USA football, go through the games that surprised us, the scores, all that jazz. Then we'll begin our talk about that Louisiana Lafayette game happening Saturday down in Lafayette. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jonathan Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com and host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. In this segment, we'll talk a little bit about Conference USA football, talking about the scores around the conference, and the ULL football game coming up for Louisiana Tech Saturday in Lafayette, the place of my birth. Seriously.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Dowling Smokehouse. Give us a call on the Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. Email your questions to radio@bleedtechblue.com or tweet us with the hashtag BTBRadio.
Jared, we'll lead with UTSA's demolishing of Houston, 27-7.
Were you able to watch any of that game?
Some of it, yes.
I watched quite a bit of it, and I will say that Houston looked a lot worse than I expected them to. UTSA played well. They played a good game. I'm not totally convinced that Tucker Carter is not as good as Eric Sosa, period. But I'm not totally convinced that Tucker Carter is the answer at quarterback, but John O'Korn, not very good. Stared receivers down the entire game. Under three balls, right.
The Houston quarterback.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was he didn't look good at all. Just not at all. I thought that Houston didn't particularly play very well.
And you know, this is the second time under Tony Levine, a former Tech assistant, by the way, under his leadership that Houston's laid an egg in the opening game. A couple of years ago when Tech went down and played them, they lost to Texas State the week before. He fired his defensive coordinator after that game. I think it was the defensive coordinator's first game. Offensive coordinator, not defensive coordinator. So I'm not sure. This week we'll know a whole lot more about UTSA as they face Arizona inside the Alamo Dome. A game that some people are saying that the Roadrunners will win. I'm not so sure. Rich Rodriguez may be the best offensive mind in college football, and they got a tall task on their hands. You look at the other games last week around Conference USA. We talked about this a little bit. UAB all over Troy, 48-10. UAB. That's a shocker, but Troy doesn't have an offense. obviously.
No, I disagree. I don't think that's a shocker at all. I think I picked UAB to win that game. I picked UAB to win that game big.
Troy's by 38?
Listen. Troy's not very good, and UAB has a sophomore running back by the name of Jordan Howard,
who
was great, and I talked about him last year.
You've been pimping him for 2 years.
And I'm going to continue to talk about him this year because he should vie for Conference USA Offensive Player of the Year honors with Rakim Cato. Jordan Howard is very, very good.
Yeah, he went for 179. No big deal. No big deal.
went for 179.
Called sarcasm. And then Western Kentucky last Friday took on Bowling Green in Bowling Green, Kentucky. But Bowling Green is actually in Bowling Green, Ohio. So there's that. Beat them 59-31. A little bit of offense played in that one.
Brandon Doughty. I've heard it said both ways. 46 of 56 for 569 yards and 6 touchdowns.
Petrino who? They're not missing Senior Petrino very much, obviously. Nebraska all over Florida Atlantic, 55-7. That was supposed to be the Battle of the Petrinos. Well, not Petrinos.
Pelini's.
Pelini's, another P. The Battle of the Pelini's until Carl Pelini decided to smoke a little bit of the wacky tobacco last year and tell on himself, and he got fired. So it was going to be the Battle of the Pelini's, but it was not. Marshall, 42-27 over Miami of Ohio. If Marshall doesn't run the table, there's something wrong. That team's good, and their schedule is not.
You know, interestingly enough, Marshall... I mean, of course, Cato had a good game, 264 yards, 3 touchdowns. But number one receiver, Tommy Shuler, only had 4 catches for 40 yards and a touchdown. They did a lot on the ground. Devin Johnson had 19 carries for 151 yards, 2 touchdowns. And then Eric Fraunfell had 5 catches, 54
God
yards,
bless you.
And Gesundheit, and 2 more touchdowns. And it was, you know, it was really never close. Marshall jumped out to a 14-0 lead, 28-3 at halftime.
And then the next game, if Notre Dame, number 17, Notre Dame, 48-17 over Rice. I was kind of surprised by that one. I thought Rice would put up a little bit more of a fight than they did, and they did early on. But the Fighting Irish blew it open. It was 28-10 at the half, 14-7 after the first quarter. I was a little surprised by that. It looks like their running game, and Rice's running game, is not what it was last year. Although they put up 141 yards, but that they would have put up 341 yards last year.
Notre Dame did a good job of really moving the ball in the air against Rice.
Well, they're pretty balanced.
Everett Olsen had 295 yards and 2 touchdowns, but look, Rice could not defend the deep ball at all, and it would have been worse had William Fuller was behind the defense, had a wide open, it was totally wide open. There wasn't a defender within 20 yards of him. He was standing at the 5-yard line. Everett Golson hit him with a deep ball, and he tried to field it like a punt and muffed it. And that's a touchdown right there. But Dreyfus Jackson I thought he looked pretty good. I watched most of that game. I have picture in picture now. So I watched.
Fancy.
Well, picture in picture works great for 2 games that you're really not all that interested in, but you still want to kind of keep up with. So I was watching Rice and Notre Dame on one side, Alabama and West Virginia on the other side until Alabama and West Virginia got so good. And I was watching Dreyfus Jackson, and Tech will struggle. If they cannot contain the edge, Tech will struggle with Dreyfus Jackson. 11 carries for 61 yards against Notre Dame. 13-24, 163 yards and a touchdown through the air. Jackson is, by the time they play him, which is the last game of the year, I think he
mid-morning.
Yeah, right. I think he will have improved enough to give Tech fits.
And Tech's defensive ends should be better by then.
Sure. I mean, you would think so. I mean, that's supposed to be the strength of that defensive line.
Correct. And then moving right along in that schedule last week, Old Dominion 41-28 over Hampton. They should have beat Hampton by more than that, but they didn't. Shouldn't give up 28 points to Hampton, but they did.
Taylor Henneke threw 2 interceptions in that game.
28-14 at the half.
It's been said that Henneke could be Conference USA Offensive Player of the Year, that he could be first team All Conference and all that stuff. Not a particularly flashy day. Had 3 touchdowns and 2 picks against Hampton.
Tech, of course, 48-16 loss on the road in Norman. Savannah State loses to Middle Tennessee State 61-7. These FCS games like this, unless it's like Hampton, where Old Dominion should have taken care of business and didn't.
Or if you're Bethune-Cookman.
Bethune-Cookman, 14-12 over Florida International, who they might as well shut down the football program. They're bad.
Oh, it's bad. It's very bad down there. And did you hear that FIU stopped allowing their only daily beat writer covering the team? They denied him credentials?
Yes, I did.
Oh my goodness.
Dumpster fires are dumpster fires.
Yeah.
Bethune-Cookman, of course, 14-12 over Florida International. Southern Miss, I don't know what's going on down there. They had such a storied program thing going on. They lose a coach, and the bottom falls out. They lose 49-0 to Mississippi State, unranked Mississippi State. A rivalry game. Southern Miss used to kind of own that state. They could argue that they were the number one program in that state. They can no longer even almost argue that point. They gave up 550 yards of offense to Mississippi State. Now, Dak Prescott, of course, from Haughton,
right down the road there,
is very good. He may be the best quarterback in the SEC. He was 18 for 26 for nearly 300 yards, 4 touchdowns, 1 interception. But that's not good for the Golden Eagles. They threw 2 interceptions. Nick Mullins, 20 for 42, 212 yards, sacked 3 times, and threw 2 picks. No touchdown passes. So, I don't know what's going on in Hattiesburg, and I think they probably wish they knew what was going on as well. North Texas, another surprise. I thought they would put up a little bit more of a fight to Texas. That may be a mental thing for them, knowing that they're playing the University of Texas. They lost 38-7. 21-0 at the half. It was 28-0 after the third quarter. They scored a touchdown seven and a half minutes left in the fourth.
North Texas didn't even make it to 100 total yards of offense against Texas. 94 total yards, 6 penalties for 56 yards. They turned the ball over 4 times. All 4 were quarterback interceptions. Josh Greer threw 2, and then Andrew McNulty threw 2 more. Neither quarterback completed 10 yards worth of passes. 8 and 7 for those two guys.
3 completions total for the team, 15 total passing yards. They were sacked a total of 4 times and picked off a total of 4 times. They completed more balls to Longhorn players than Mean Green Eagles.
So, Tech fans, at least take that into consideration when you look at this Oklahoma game. Because I can tell you what, Oklahoma, regardless of what happened last year, Oklahoma, Texas is a good team, but Oklahoma is a better team than Texas.
And then you look at the running backs for Texas. Jonathan Gray, 16 carries for 82 yards, average of 5.3 yards a carry, along a 42. Malcolm Brown, 13 carries, 65 yards, average of 5 yards a carry, long of 26 and 2 touchdowns. So, I'm really shocked that North Texas struggled like that. I thought that they would compete for the Western Division title, and unless something changes drastically, and you do, every team gets they show the most improvement between game one and game two. But there's a lot of improvement that needs to happen.
Well, especially when you're talking about starting off with these body bag games like this. Of course, they're going to show a lot of improvement from game one to game two. I can't sit here and say, oh, well, look at all these positive things Louisiana Tech did in their 48-16 loss, and then tell you, oh, North Texas is really, really bad because they lost 38-7 to Texas. I mean, taking all things into consideration, I did not expect North Texas to look so bad against Texas, but it's still Texas. So I'll, take it with a grain of salt. I do think that Louisiana Tech will beat North Texas in 2 weeks.
And then you look at UTEP beats New Mexico 31-24 in a rivalry game. UTEP's better than anybody I think expected them to be. 446 total yards of offense to New Mexico's 477 yards. There was a little bit of offense going on in that one. That'll be an interesting game in Ruston. I'm glad for the Bulldogs' sake that they get them at home. That's the redout game, if memory serves me correctly. I'm pretty sure it is. That will be a good game as well. So that wraps up last week in Conference USA. This week, if you will run through those again real quickly, or not again, we'll run through those. Arizona at UTSA, Western Kentucky at Illinois. That's a game that the Hilltoppers could win. Florida Atlantic at Alabama. Sorry, Owls. SMU at North Texas. North Texas will lose that one. UAB at Mississippi State. This will show us something.
I think you're going to see Jordan Howard look impressive. I think he's going to go for 90. I don't think he'll go for 100.
You need to start calling him my man Jordan. Middle Tennessee at Minnesota. That's an interesting game. Old Dominion at NC State. NC State struggled mightily, but I still think they'll take care of that one. Wagner at Florida International. Whoever Wagner is could beat Florida International. Louisiana Tech, of course, at ULL. Alcorn State at Southern Miss. Hopefully Southern Miss can take care of business there. Rhode Island at Marshall. All right. Texas Tech at UTEP. Texas Tech struggled as well. That may be an interesting one as well.
There'll be a lot of offense in that game, or lack of defense, whatever you prefer.
Both. One and the same. Other side of the break, we'll have Josh Parrott, a former beat writer for the Advertiser in Lafayette, talking a little Raging Cajun football here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio, and here on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jared, a couple of sponsors. Then, what did I say?
Nothing.
You're looking at me like I'm crazy.
I didn't have my headset on. I felt like I wasn't playing with the right equipment.
Well,
like
you weren't. You didn't have your headphones on.
I didn't have my headphones on. I was too busy trying them.
Get your head out of the clouds, kid.
Get my head in the game. Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Y Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Dowling Smokehouse. Give us a call on the Keller Williams Parish Y Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. Rafe, if you're out there, we need to hear your weekly call. Send us your emails at radio@bleedtechblue.com, and of course, you can tweet us with the hashtag BTB Radio.
Josh, how's it going, man?
Oh, I'm doing good, guys. How are you guys?
Doing wonderful. You spent a few years down in Lafayette covering the Cajuns. Just talk about that program and what they've done to really revitalize it.
Oh, I think if we were to discuss kind of what's changed over the last few years down with that program, you have to start with the hiring of Mark Hudspeth. Mark is a really energetic and enthusiastic coach. I got a chance after he got hired to go up to his hometown just outside of Starkville, Mississippi, and spend some time with his family and some of his old friends. And he is just a guy who has worked his way up the ladder, was a very successful coach at North Alabama, was an assistant there for a few years at Mississippi State. He played and was a quarterback and a defensive back at Delta State. And just very energetic coach, finds a way to motivate his guys. And, you know, the Cajuns have gone 9-4 and won the New Orleans Bowl the last 3 years with him there. They care about him and value him so much that over the summer, you know, they gave him a new six-year deal. He became the first million-dollar coach in the league. He's a guy who's making really good money where he is. He's been able to get those fans down there to really buy in, and he really turned around a culture that, I felt like Ricky was a good guy, and I felt like he had them right there, but he just wasn't able to kind of get them over that hump. And Mark came in and just absolutely bowled everybody over, impressed a lot of people. And, you know, once they had success that first year, they were able to just kind of build on a little bit more every year. And you look at them now, they have a very, very experienced program, experienced team, a lot of juniors and seniors, and they're starting to get some guys in years past they might be able to get maybe every so often. Now they're starting to really kind of load up with some talent, and they you know, got off to a good start last week, and you know, they're favored to win the Sun Belt, and you know, Mark's going to be a guy who's going to be talked about, you know, if they end up having success throughout the rest of the year. He's going to be coming up for his name will be mentioned for a lot of different jobs out there. All people are already plugging him in for potential SEC openings, and you know, he's a guy who I think has that type of potential to do that eventually.
When you look at this game defensively, they're running a 3-4, which is not, it's kind of unconventional at the collegiate level. When Tech saw it last week against OU, but that's OU can get that size of defensive lineman, and ULL's got some size, that size defensive lineman, but do they have the depth? Can they go three deep all the way across, maybe like obviously not like an Oklahoma, but do they have enough depth there to roll that big three technique D tackle in to play the DM position?
I think we'll have to see. I know for a fact they have the talent. You know, when I'm looking at the depth chart and I see guys that are, you know, 6'3", 300, I see guys that played a year at Miami and then transferred back home to play. And, you know, those are your backups, you know, on the front. You got a guy like Justin Hamilton, you know, who's a 310-pound, 6'2" senior who's been around. He's a nose tackle. He knows how to play very aggressive. Christian Ringo is another big body, about 300 pounds at defensive tackle. They definitely, as far as the starters are concerned there, I don't think there's any doubt that they have the big bodies. You look as you take kind of a step back, like with most programs, those guys that are backing up those starters don't have quite as much experience. I do know that what you're going to see, at least from the offensive game plan, you know, they were very vanilla last week, and I don't think they had to get all that complicated defensively. You know, they may add a few wrinkles this week, but I think if those starters can just stay healthy with Hamilton and Ringo, I mean, those guys just by themselves are talented enough. If you can get the younger guys to rotate in a little bit, you know, there may be a little bit of a drop-off, but I know that Hudspeth really respects Dixon and the program that they have there and the running potential and going against that offensive line. So he knows that those guys are going to be challenged, and it's going to be interesting to see how those two match up against each other.
What matchups do you see standing out that could be the most intriguing to watch?
Well, just looking at it from the perspective of what the Cajuns have, I think that the running back combination that they have with Alonzo Harris and then Elijah McGuire, you know, that's kind of that thunder and lightning combination that they have. You know, McGuire's more the home run threat. Harris is a big 6'2", 240 running back who was actually recruited by Florida State, Kentucky, and Louisville out of high school as a fullback. You know, I'm interested to see kind of how that works itself out going against the Tech defense. You know, Elijah McGuire had 129 rushing yards and a touchdown last week against Southern on just 13 carries. Harris only had 47 yards on 14 rushes, but they didn't really have to use him all that much. I think that's going to be interesting to see because the Cajuns have been very balanced for the last few years offensively. Terrence Broadway can throw the ball, but they're really at their best when they can have some offensive balance. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there because if Tech can bottle them up a little bit with the running game and make them throw it, I think that changes the game plan a little bit. But McGuire and Harris are both you know, elite running backs. You can argue maybe which one might be the best in the league, but they're both very talented. And I think Tech's going to have their hands full trying to stop those guys.
And you look at Broadway. Broadway's a guy that he seems to struggle a little bit if you can get some pressure on him and get him rattled. Is that correct?
Well, he's a guy, you know, he's a four-star recruit coming out of high school. Oregon and Alabama were looking at him. He went to Houston, ended up stepping in when Case Keenum got hurt, and then he ended up losing the starting job to another freshman, and he transferred out. He's a very mature young man. He's had some injuries over time. You know, he came out last year in the New Orleans Bowl and played even though he was hurt, really kind of gutted that out. I think with any quarterback, if you can get a little bit of pressure around a guy, he's going to have a little bit more trouble than he would normally if you protect him. I think that's what Tech has to do. If Tech wants to have a chance, you know, against the Cajuns. They're going to have to find a way to kind of bottle up McGuire and Harris. And they're going to just have to find a way to get some hands in the face and kind of get some pressure on Broadway and make him, you know, at least have to have a little bit of pressure, be under a little bit of duress. But he's a very mature young man. He's married. He has a young kid. You know, he's really made a lot of steps maturity-wise. And I got a chance to know him a little bit right after he joined the program. And I've been very impressed with the maturity that he's had. And I think if he can stay healthy, you know, he's a guy who's going to end up having a big year for them. And it's going to be interesting, again, to kind of see how Tech is able to get at him, if they can get in his face and maybe fluster him a little bit. You know, that'll definitely change things. But I think that's going to be a little bit more difficult than me just telling you they have to do that.
Josh, change the subject. Thanks for joining. Thanks for talking to Cajun. But I think I would be remiss not to talk about Louisiana Tech basketball, since your primary things these days is basketball times. What's your impression about Louisiana Tech basketball from the outside looking in? I hate to put you on a spot like this.
No, not a problem at all. I really like Mike White. I think that he's stepped in and done a tremendous job. I like the personnel that they have. I feel like they've been right there for the last couple of years. You know, it's been an issue of an injury here or there. You know, if Appleby doesn't get hurt last year, I think things are different. I like he's going after guys who can play multiple spots. He has good length on the inside. You know, Kaiser's really fun to watch. Making the transition that they did, you know, moving around leagues still be able to win at the level that they had. I was a little surprised that Mike didn't leave last year because, you know, kind of like Hudspeth in football, I think Mike's a very hot name. Linked to a number of SEC openings potentially in the future. I just really enjoy watching what he's done there. I think that he has a program that's had a lot of success under his watch, and they're going to be, I think, in line to continue to have more success. You're right. I enjoy getting to talk with him whenever I get the opportunity to do that, just because he's a young, energetic coach, and they're without him coming back now. Sounds like he's finally healthy again, and I think they're going to have another successful year.
Well, Josh, really appreciate you joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio, and I look forward to talking to you down the road.
Hey, no problem. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Josh Parrott, former beat writer for the Cajuns at the Advertiser in Lafayette. Let's take this break. Other side of the break, we'll have Justin Ellis, Oakland Raiders defensive tackle, former Louisiana Tech D tackle, with us here live from Oakland. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com. Jared King, a couple of sponsors, then we'll get to Jelly.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parishwide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Dowling Smokehouse. Give us a call at the Keller Williams Parishwide Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. Email your questions to radio@BleedTechBlue.com. And, of course, you can tweet your questions with the hashtag BTBRadio.
Justin, how's it going, my man?
It's going good. How are you?
I'm great, man. How's Oakland treating you?
Oh, it's good, man. Beautiful weather, man. It's different, man. It's a culture shock, but it's nice out here.
Have you gotten adjusted to the culture? It is very different. I took my honeymoon to San Francisco a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm adjusted now. I mean, it's starting to feel like home now, you know.
Well, that's good. And I know you had a little bit of an injury this preseason. You feeling good?
Yes, I'm feeling so much better, man. You know, it was just I got hit in the head, but I'm feeling better now. So,
they took a precaution and left you out for concussion.
Yeah, because I kept having symptoms. I mean, they didn't nobody expect for it to last that long, but I kept having symptoms, so they just just to make sure. You know, they just want to hold me out one more week, and so I can be ready for the season. So,
and it looks like you've got a chance to see a lot of playing time this year. What's the positive feedback you've gotten from the coaches in Oakland?
I mean, they like me a lot. I mean, they really like they just want me to grow up in a hurry and make sure I just. you know, do my job and make sure I dominate my job. And so, you know, that's all they want from me. I mean, they looking for me to play around like 25, 30 snaps at my best ability, you know. So that's what I've been hearing from lately.
They like you as kind of a space eater, or do they want you to get after the passer, or both?
It depends. Mostly it's space eating, but at the same time, they want me to push the pocket. So it just depends on what package we in and, you know, what team we playing.
Justin, a little funny story that I'd like you to tell. At your at Pro Day, there was some talk about you and Beats.
Oh, man.
Can you tell us about your experience with Beats?
Man, Beats are horrible, man. I tried it. You know, I usually be able to force some stuff down, but I just couldn't force it down. Man, I had to spit it in the napkin. But lately, man, I had a smoothie with Beats in it, man. It was actually good. You know, it shocked me.
So is it something your trainer had you eating for some weight loss, or what was going on with the Beats?
Because you know they're good for you. So yeah, it was for weight loss.
And speaking of weight loss, how's the weight doing? Is everybody happy with where you are right now? You have to lose some weight. How's that going?
No, yeah, everybody happy with me right now. I mean, I'm right around 340, but I mean, just me knowing myself, I want to be a little lower, you know. But right now, I'm just not trying to, like, you know, go down too fast, because, you know, I don't want to lose any of my strength. So I'm going to just, you know, make sure I stay up under 340, around 340 until the off season, then, you know, and try to shed some more weight coming into, you know, later on this year.
Does being on the West Coast away from all the fried food help?
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure, yeah.
And then whenever you think back to your freshman year at Tech, I know you were heavier than they wanted you to be. You probably got discouraged by all that. How was it difficult to keep your nose down and lose the weight and stay focused?
It was difficult. I mean, because first of all, I didn't know I had got that heavy. You know, I couldn't tell. But then, you know, once I seen it, it was like, oh man, you know. You know, I'm really heavy right now. So, I mean, but after a while, I mean, after I put my head down and work, I mean, it shed off pretty fast. And, you know, I mean, I get up every now and then, but, I mean, for the most part, you know, I stay way lower than I, you know, I came in at.
Well, that's good. And has your nickname of Jelly Bean or Jelly, is it stuck with you?
Oh, yeah, it stuck with me. It's, yeah.
So how fast did it take them to start calling you Jelly and not Justin?
Oh, no, they called me Jelly from the start, everybody. I'm talking about, you know, everyone, even the owner. I mean, everybody called me Jelly.
That's funny. When you talk about the process of the NFL draft and playing in the league, a lot of people may not realize that it really kind of starts out pretty early in your senior season. The scouts start coming around, they start doing research on you. And what was that experience like?
Tomorrow, like the beginning of the season?
Yeah, well, in the beginning of the season when the scouts start coming around, they start interviewing you, seeing what you're like, and that kind of thing.
I mean, it's motivation. I mean, that lets you know that you are a prospect. I mean, you have a chance, you know, for them to be talking to you and looking at you. So, you know, it's motivation to help you, like, you know, dominate and try to, you know, get that opportunity to play in the league.
And you were fortunate that you didn't have anything in your past that they would bring up that would get awkward. So that probably made it a little bit easier for you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, my background and just everything, that helped me out a lot, you know, because, you know, most guys have a bad background or something that, you know, to tell. Besides my weight was a thing that, you know, there was a constant question. But, I mean, besides that, I mean, you know, I had good feedback as far as my background and, you know, my past, my history.
How important was that, Justin, for you? Was it something that came easy for you to keep your background clear, or was it just kind of a blessing for you? Was it hard for you? Talk about that.
No, I mean, it wasn't hard because I was raised right, but at the same time, yeah, it was just a blessing. I mean, because, like, a lot of guys fall into situations that, I mean, it was a bad situation, the wrong place, wrong time. I mean, and I was, you know, fortunate enough to not fall into those type of situations. So, yeah, it's all a blessing.
Were you a guy around the Tech locker room that maybe some of the guys that maybe were in the wrong place at the wrong time, that you tried to say, hey, you got to watch where you are at certain times, and just kind of were a dad figure to them?
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily a dad figure, but like a brother, you know, just telling him, like, yes, man, you know, stuff happened in life to where, you know, you be in the wrong place at the wrong time, but, you know, try to make sure, you know, you stay in the right place and watch your surroundings. You know, that's just stuff that we tell each other. Even myself, I mean, even other people tell me that, you know, so that's the type of stuff we tell each other.
And, of course, you're down in the Bay Area or over in the Bay Area. Have you had much time to spend with Quentin Patton?
No, when I first got out, you know, we supposed to have linked, we supposed to hooked up or whatever, but it just never worked out because he was busy, I was busy. And so, you know, with the season and stuff, it's kind of hard to get across that Bay Bridge because it's so much traffic. So, you know, maybe during the off season we'll link up or doing, you know, a break or something. So
It's not like going to Monroe, is it?
No, it's nothing like that. You got a plan.
Well, Justin, we really appreciate you coming on. I know you got an appointment to get to, so I don't want to keep you too long. But I know that the Tech fans miss you, and tell them where they can find you on Twitter.
You can find me on Twitter at Jelly _ THADON. And, you know, I'm there.
All right, man.
I finally got the blue check. Man. I finally got the blue check. Man.
The man is verified. He is Twitter verified. He has arrived, folks. Jelly, appreciate you coming on. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, man. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Justin Ellis, right. Former defensive tackle for Louisiana Tech, joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Twitter verified Justin Ellis, Jelly _ the Don.
Yeah, Jelly _ the Don, THA, the. You know who was Twitter verified and then suddenly wasn't?
Well, this is going to be interesting.
Miles White. He was Twitter verified, then suddenly he was no longer Twitter verified. And I'll have to check and see if he's actually Twitter verified again, but there was a time there where I...
Talking about the Bay Area, Twitter's a business in the Bay Area disrespecting Miles White. He is who he says he is.
He is who he says he is. He is who we thought he was. I don't know.
That's kind of funny, though, about with Quentin Patton being there in the Bay Area. And I will tell you, traffic for my honeymoon just this summer, traffic in that area is absolutely insane. The double-decker Bay Bridge is bumper-to-bumper, top and bottom. It's crazy. Let's take a break right here. Other side of the break, we'll talk a little bit more ULL. Give our predictions of the game. That game can be seen on ESPN3, but you're in Louisiana if you're listening to this. Even if you aren't, you're on the internet, and you're a big Tech fan. Get your tail to Lafayette. Watch the Bulldogs take on the Cajuns. One random fact, did you notice that Josh never had an identity crisis for them?
No. Well, but he refrained from calling them Louisiana or
UL.
But he didn't call them ULL either. He called them the Cajuns the entire time.
While we're on this subject, and I did bring it up myself, so I threw myself a softball. That is what they need to embrace as their identity. Who else can call themselves the Cajuns?
No, you're exactly right. I mean, I could go for a long time about all of the reasons why ULL will never... Whatever.
But the Raging Cajun moniker is unique. No one else can take that from you.
Sure.
Embrace it. You are the Cajuns. Congratulations, you're the Cajuns in North Louisiana. You're never going to be known as UL by the majority of the population. Sorry. Thanks for playing. We'll be back right after this.
Fortune, babe, mirror vein, gone insane, but the memory remains.
Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio and ESPN Radio 97.7. I am Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio, Jared King. Like we don't do this after every break, the man's looking for his notes. He's found them, ladies and gentlemen, a couple of sponsors. Now he's laughing and he cannot speak.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams, Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Dowling's Smokehouse. Give us a call on the Keller Williams, Parish Wide Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. Email your questions to radio@bleedtechblue.com. Tweet your questions to us at Bleed Tech Blue with the hashtag BTB. Radio.
If you're wondering, yes, I just threw you under the bus. I hope it felt good.
Every time we come back from break, I pull up the email so I can read the advertisers so that I don't get them wrong. And
but you're always shocked.
I keep putting my phone back in my pocket.
So ULL victorious 45-6 over Southern. Southern was missing like five players because they didn't have their paperwork for the NCAA.
Right.
This is real life.
Yeah.
And, you know, they put up 279 yards against ULL.
Yeah, 202 passing, 77 rushing. They completed a pretty decent percentage of third down, 7 of 19. Honestly, I mean, it was 24-0 at halftime, and so they were already out of it. But they had flashes where they at least looked competitive.
Yeah.
I mentioned this in the break, and I'm going to mention it now on air. Terrence Bradshaw threw for three touchdowns, but he also threw two picks against Southern. Last year, he threw 19 touchdowns and 12 picks on the season. Broadway throws a lot of interceptions.
He does throw a lot of interceptions. And that's why I asked Josh the question about pressure. He doesn't handle pressure well at all. So I would imagine that some of those picks, maybe one of those picks was from pressure. He rushes his decision-making. So Tech's going to have to play, like last week, you got to play disciplined football because you're going to have to blitz to get after him. That's something to watch. Here's a stat that I just found in Willie Quinn for Southern University. 8 catches for 105 yards. No touchdowns, but 13.1 yard per catch average. Mr. Willie Quinn is 5'5", 145 pounds. That's unreal.
It's a little like Tevin King, except smaller.
That's small. So that's interesting to me that they couldn't stop him at 8 catches for 105 yards. So I think Tech's going to be okay throwing the ball. Now, do they need to throw the ball to open up the passing, the running game? That may be something to watch. Tech came out and tried to run the ball against OU, which I don't completely blame them. That is your bread and butter.
Well, on the first drive they threw three consecutive passes and didn't try to hand it off one time. They didn't look to run the ball on the first drive. Second drive,
they lined up in their heavy package to try to make it look like they were going to run.
Second drive, they ran the ball once. Third drive, they tried running the ball all three times. I don't know. It's just interesting to look at, you know, some of ULL's wins and losses from a season ago. They lost a really bad Arkansas team in the home opener. I mean, in the opener at Arkansas last year, 34-14. Broadway threw a pick. Threw another one against Kansas State. Threw one against Nichols. I mean, he does throw a lot of interceptions. When we're talking about a team in Louisiana Tech who's defensive secondary is supposed to be its strength, and you'd have to think that if they can get some pressure on the quarterback, which they didn't do a lot of against Oklahoma, but again, they're talking about a really big offensive line. If you get some pressure on Broadway and make him throw it up, a guy like Adarius Barnes, a guy like Levander Liggins could come down with a pick. Broadway, of course, has shown that he's certainly capable of throwing them.
And against ULM last year, he threw three interceptions, and that loss, he got hurt in the game and was out for the next one against South Alabama that ULL lost. But three picks, one touchdown pass, 6.6 yards an attempt. So they do a lot of the classic stuff that spread teams do. Well, they want to get somebody in space and make somebody miss.
Another thing about that loss to ULM was that we're talking about a game that was closely contested. It was 31-28, ULM won. It was 21-14 at halftime. Then ULM comes out and scores two touchdowns in the third quarter. Well, here's the deal. Terrence Broadway, two of those three interceptions that he threw against ULM were in the end zone. He threw them in the ULM end zone. I mean, you're not just giving the ball away, but you're giving away points.
Yeah. They put up 300. They had put up 471 yards of total offense against ULM. ULM with 394. The crazy thing about this game Saturday to me is the Vegas line. It opened up at 16 a 16-point favorite for the Cajuns. Now, I think a home field advantage is playing into that.
Sure.
Probably 7 points of that. So you call it a 9-point game in a neutral site. So it's down to 12.5 and 13 on a lot of different, on most bookies.
Which would bring it down to 6 points on a neutral site, 5.5, something like that, which is less than a touchdown, which is a close game.
And I think this is going to be a close game. I still stand by we don't know a ton about Tech.
Right. No. Again, like we said, you don't know. You really can't assess a lot about the Oklahoma loss. And then also, ULL was playing against a Southern team that was missing 5 players. So,
Tech knows a lot more about ULL than ULL knows about Tech.
Hudspeth did mention in his interview yesterday that the offense was very vanilla against Southern. He said that,
but they've got tape from that offense for years.
He said that the offense against Tech would be Rocky Road and cookies and cream. Whatever.
He also said that Tech has owned this series of late.
Sure. He also said that his players were taking it very seriously, that he was taking it seriously, that it was a rival game, that it was an important game. And
I said this during the sports company at the end of the show. Dare I say that this game means more to ULL than it does Tech?
Tech's won the past 6 in the series, 97 to 04. The ULL hasn't lost, I mean, hasn't won at home against Tech since 1995. I mean, granted, they haven't played in a decade, but I mean, Tech has, I mean, they have owned that series, especially of late. For ULL, it's all about identity. It's all about being the second best program in the state. It's all about name recognition. It's because ULL is, for one, they're trying to keep their coach in Hudspeth. He's gone after this season. There's almost no doubt. So, this game does mean more to ULL than to Tech, and part of the reason is because Tech understands that they're already in the better conference. They already have the more bowl tie-ins. They already know that they're rebuilding and they're on their way up. They already have a redshirt freshman quarterback right now who's going to be really good for the next 3 or 4 years. What this game is all about, ULL staying relevant.
And then just to kind of switch gears, there's been some fodder out that ULL is going to bring in all of Tech's recruits. Well, you can't bring in all of them.
No.
Tech's only got 3 commitments in South Louisiana.
Right.
They're bringing in one from Shreveport-Bossier that I know for sure, LaDante Davenport. Davenport having 2 other guys from Shreveport-Bossier committed to Tech helps Tech a lot. Rashid Bonnet from Laroville, right down the road from Lafayette. He is pretty stinking firm with Tech. I feel okay about him, feel good about him. And then Tech's commitment from Homa, his name is escaping, Brinson is his last name. They haven't invited him, so he's not going to the game. And Tech's got another commitment from St. Aug and Theron Williams. I don't think that there's anything to worry about there. So, yes, if they do bring in Tech commitments, that's normal. That is the way the game is played. You can't tell me that whenever Alabama and LSU are recruiting against somebody, and if a kid's committed to LSU, LSU happens to play at Alabama that year, that Alabama's not bringing that kid on a visit for that game.
Sure. I don't think there's any question that some of these kids will be in attendance, but regardless of whether or not Tech wins or loses, these kids are looking at it like, okay, I'm going to get a chance to compete for a starting position. I'm going to be part of the reason why this team rebuilds and plays in bowl games and stuff like that. I think they already know, they already have an idea of what kind of role that they want, and they already know some of the players that they're going to be playing with. Having guys come in with you that you know and that you like certainly helps. Is Brandon Dermond going to be at the ULL game? Let me tell you what, Brandon. If there's any commit who I'm 100% certain is coming to Tech, it's Brandon Dermond. I don't think there's any chance that he would be swayed to go anywhere else or to ULL.
You want to give us your prediction? We're running up against the end of the show.
Absolutely. It's
three minutes.
That's lots of time.
It is a lot of time in the radio world.
It's a lot of time. Are we taking Tabor's prediction this week also?
Well, we always take Tabor's prediction.
Tabor, why don't you go first?
You don't say.
You could have said that before you turned on the mic.
23-17 ULL.
Well, he's picking the under, and he's saying Tech covers the spread of, it's at 14 at most places now.
What is the over-under?
56.5.
56.5. All right. I'm going to say there's more offense than that. I think that ULL will score more points than that on Tech's defense. I'm going to say that ULL wins 31-24.
You just said that is right at the over-under.
I asked you what the over-under was.
And you said they would score more than that, and you picked 55 points.
No, I said they would score
points.
More than what,
oh, okay.
than what Joe Dirt thought.
I actually think Tech pulls this one out. Maybe I'm just being a homer. I'll go 32-28 Tech.
32 is such an odd score.
Yeah, it is.
But you're doing it more for over-under purposes and spread purposes than anything.
Maybe.
I would imagine.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Oh, no, there's no maybe not.
You know me too well, sir. For John on the ones and the twos, Joe Dierte. For Jared King, co-host here of Bleed Tech Blue Radio and staff writer at BleedTechBlue.com. He'll have a preview out later this week on the game. I'll have some random questions that I posted this past week that I thought that was a pretty fun thing to put together, my top 10. It was fun. And then we'll have some more features on ULL Louisiana Tech on BleedTechBlue.com. Come check it out. 7-day free trial going on right now. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Be back next week. Same time, same place. See you then.
Been listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio with Jonathan Ford. Listen to Bleed Tech Blue Radio every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on ESPN 97.7.